Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Gallant Few Rangers podcast. My name is Mason Stewart and I'll be your host for another Premier League show. With me tonight, we have starting with Graham. How are you, Graham?
Yeah, I'm good, Mason. Thanks for having me on. Always enjoy a Monday getting to talk about football. So yeah, looking forward to talking about a few of the incidents and goings on the past week.
There's always stuff to talk about in the Premier League, isn't there? I know it's not a full fixture list this weekend, but there's just so many talking points. I feel like we say that sort of every week. But also tonight with us, we've got Jamie as well, and no game for you boys this weekend, so nice little break.
A good 17 days off. However, there's still so much going on in the Premier League, which, as you said, it's kind of like, even with the only half a list, there's still so much to talk about in the games that actually did happen. And it's not even just about results, it's about things that are happening inside games, which is absolutely mental right now. But yeah, 17 days off until we come back on April the 1st against the lovely Man City. So countdown is on.
Oh, what a game that will be. look forward to that. These international breaks, I absolutely despise them. I don't know if you boys feel any different, but I cannot stand it.
But, I think it can depend.
Yeah, I think being English, living in Scotland, I'm not a big fan of the internationals. However, the tournaments is probably the only time I get switched on. I do love a St. George's Cross flying in my back garden just to piss off the neighbours. Yeah, I don't really bother with the internationals until it comes to tournament time, really.
What about you, Graham? Are you an international man? Big Scotland man, I think, don't you?
Yeah. I like to see my country doing well. I think I'd be lying if I said I didn't. And then the new top is coming out. I don't think I've heard one person say it's not an absolute building. I'm talking about the most hardened Scotlanders. I think I might be buying this top that's coming out. But no, obviously, like, it depends. See, when your team's doing well, the international break's the last thing you want to see. If your team's kind of up and down, it can be a kind of welcome break. It can definitely all depend. For me right now, I'd definitely rather not have it. Club over country, of course, I think most people are, but I definitely don't absolutely despise it like some.
Nah, yeah, it's just not for me. I don't have a feeling towards England or Scotland internationally, so yeah, I'm just a bit vanilla when it comes to international football, boys. But we'll go back to the games last week, just very quickly. Brentford beat Southampton 2-0 away from home. Again, Brentford continuing that good form, and we'll touch on them a little bit later, as well as Southampton. We touched their games at the weekend. The other game that leads us on nicely, because we spoke about this in depth last week, and then look what happens. Patrick Vieira gets the sack after Brighton beat Palace 1-0. Solly Marsh with a winner. Another game where Palace don't you know, really don't score. But, you know, first of all, don't score, but don't look like scoring. And it's not a derby. I'm not calling it out. I see one of the newspapers the next day saying Vieira sacked after derby defeat. Do me a favour. It's never a derby, but it was a big defeat for him. And Graham, you called this. I hope you're calling a Rangers related as well later on, because you absolutely got it spot on. You got the sack. But what did you make of it? You obviously not surprised by it.
No, not at all. Look, as I said before, you know, Steve Parrish texted me after the pod last week and just went, look, Graham, what you've said is kind of, you know, it's made me realise, it's tipped me back over. I was back and forth with it. No, look, it was the writing's on the wall. I cannot believe the reaction to it. I mean, the run they were on was absolutely honking. They hadn't won one game since early November. Vincent Kompany, I found his comments a bit bizarre in terms of he pointed towards five decent teams they'd played in this long run and that they were overachieving. Like, there's one thing being 12th in the Premier League if you're 10 to 15 points off relegation to being 12th in the Premier League when between the bottom and 12th there's 4 points or something like that. Some would say Palace are overachieving. I do disagree. I think Palace have now been in the Premier League long enough. I think they are a staple of Premier League and should be as such. At worst, I think they should be the kind of between that 11th and 10th kind of area, the mid-table. And I would have thought that's what their fans would be expecting at this point in time. So I completely disagree with this overachieving chat. I think they've done the right thing. Obviously, we spoke about what managers coming in. Again, there's been a massive kind of... I get for some fans, going back to Roy Hodgson would be a dreadful shout. I think if you're looking for somebody interim to come in before the end of the season, where a potential manager is going to be available to take them forward, I don't think it's a terrible shout. I really don't. But of course, I'm not a Crystal Palace fan. And I guess I don't know the ins and outs, the relationship with them and Hodgson and how they feel about him from the years he was there. From the outside looking in, I think it would be pretty astute, to be honest, to have him till the end of the season, safely keep them up and then get somebody in that's going to take them forward.
No, absolutely. And I think you're right, Graham, from sort of outside looking in, that's all you want is a manager to come in, make sure you stay up, and then you look at, you know, a different project next season. But the reaction's been mental. But Hodgson didn't leave on bad terms at Palace, but I think that he got to the point where the fans just had enough. They wanted something different. So they're not taking it well. Jamie, what's your thoughts on this? Are you got any differences to Graham? That was you surprised to see Vieira go?
Was I surprised? No. I think Graham called it, as you said, a couple of weeks, you know, that run that they were on. It wasn't just about the points. It was about the fact they weren't getting goals, they weren't getting shots. There was everything going against them. But I do believe there's another flip side to this, and I'm not going to go for manager loyalty because there is no manager loyalty in the Premier League. But Palace finished 12th last season. Palace are currently 12th. The only big difference is that all the bottom teams, there's not that gap, there's no safety net, which Graham obviously pointed out. So I understand where the nervousness comes from. I do believe Vieira had enough in him for them to escape the drop. If you look at the remaining 10 fixtures, 8 out of the 10 fixtures are with teams that are below them currently. So that means on paper, they've got the majority of the big teams or the big games out of the way. And if you look at some of those games, I'll take Liverpool as an example. It's not like they've been battered off any of the teams. They've actually just not taken the chances, and the other teams probably just came through it, winning 1-0, 2-0. You know, it's not like they've been absolutely scunnered in a game. If anything, the game at the weekend was probably the first one where you're looking, they just look at an absolute shell of themselves. So I do believe that Vieira was trying to do something. I think that's where the fan backlash at the moment is probably coming from, is that they probably looking at the fixtures and they're thinking of, obviously, well, we've got the harder fixtures out of the way. They've got 8 out of the 10 remaining fixtures of people below them. You can see them getting points. If it's a big if they were to string 2 games together, then massively, you know, that safety buff is kind of there. It's just who flinches first, and it's obviously Parrish that's flinched first. I do believe bringing Roy back for another team would be absolutely mental. The one thing I would probably say about it is why get rid of Vieira before the Arsenal game, knowing you've got an international 2 week after it? Surely you would give him the Arsenal game, knowing full well what you were going to do, unless there'd been some kind of crazy fallout, which it doesn't seem like it has been, because Parrish's press conference or Parrish's statement was very commendable of Vieira. It doesn't seem like somebody just been fired, if you know what I mean, the way you kind of give him a send-off. So I do think that's a little crazy. It obviously shows that they got rid of him without a plan, which, again, we've seen before in this season that's happened with Leeds, Southampton, where they've now scraping the barrel, and all of a sudden Roy Hodgson's back on the board. Roy Hodgson left. He got a send off when he left Palace. He also got a send off last season that when he left Watford, it was their last game. Who's going to come back for a third send off? And that's what I mean. Like, Graham's got massively valid points in terms of the fixtures and everything else. I do think there's another side to it, though, that it does seem a bit crazy at this time, at this point, to do what they've done.
I've got to say, I don't understand where people are like, oh, he would have turned it around and he would have went in the run. Even taking away the insane amount of games, they hadn't even won in 2023. We talked about them not scoring for however many games. But Vieira's managerial career isn't exactly unbelievable in its own right anyway. I mean, just looking at his stats there, he had a win rate of 39% with Nice, and then he's in a win rate of 29% with Crystal Palace. I just don't understand where the confidence comes. Guy was one of the best midfielders, certainly in the Premier League history, etc. What a player, unbelievable, achieved so much. But sometimes it doesn't mean you cut it, and I just don't get why everyone was where everyone thinks and had the confidence to say, we'll turn it around. Palace have done the best thing. They definitely have a core group of players that are good enough to stay up, and they'll be hoping for a new manager bounce, whoever it is.
I think they were just getting players back. You know, Zaha's only just come back. Edouard played at the weekend for the first time in probably about 6 weeks. So all the signs were there that they potentially could do something with it. But it's always a big effort, isn't it? And the one narrative that I have heard is that Vieira was too nice to the players. That, you know, the hierarchy weren't seeing the desire. They weren't seeing anybody getting shouted at half-time and stuff, which I kind of, you know, obviously everybody knows what Vieira's like as a player, but apparently as a manager, he's a completely different person, and he's more about, you know, he's more about the positivity. And I think, you know, some people within the backroom staff have probably highlighted that to Parrish as maybe an issue as a stumbling block, and that's where they've probably fallen out of love with Vieira to some extent. I don't necessarily see Roy Hodgson being that person though either. That's probably the bit I'm confused with. So, you know, whoever they're bringing in, it's going to be a tough job, but they are probably going to be one of the favourites now to get sucked in and probably get involved in that battle, not just purely for the fact they've got no manager at the moment.
I kind of look at it, and there's not an obvious standout. I know we've said this before about other sackings, and you go, apart from Dyche, to be fair, at Everton, I think that was the one that we all sort of went, yeah, that makes sense. You could see that happening. Maybe should have happened a little bit earlier. But with Palace, you know,
Jesse Marsh was shouted earlier, because apparently when they were looking at Vieira, they actually interviewed Marsh. So whether they go back to that drawing board, I'd be very, very surprised.
Not for me. I'm not a fan of Jesse Marsh, to be honest. But then, you know, it's I think anyone they got in, I'd say the same thing. You know, Gerrard's name touted. Would if I was a Palace fan, you know, take away being a Rangers supporter, if I was a Palace fan and looked at it, would I want Gerrard right now? Probably not. Not without his backroom team as well. That's gone. You know, his last two have gone. Gerrard on his own. I'd be worried. I think Palace are banging trouble. Anyway, we said about Zaha, and we always talk about Zaha, but you said about Edouard there and Mateta. They're not goal scorers. They're not players that are going to dig you out goals to get you out of trouble. They're one goal every seven, one goal every eight. So I think Palace are going to really, really struggle here. To be honest, I think that their form since the World Cup, I think it's going to take a lot for them to stay up now, whoever comes in there. But we will go straight on to the Arsenal game then, Graham. On Sunday, I feel like we always start with Arsenal, but I wasn't going to tonight. But I think where they played Palace, it's only fair. Arsenal winning 4-1. It's their 22nd win of the Premier League so far this season. Saka again just looked, you know, he's absolutely flying at the moment. And Martinelli as well. You know, you think that that left. It was actually, I was actually saying over the weekend, I'm a big fan of Smith Rowe, but he's hardly kicked a ball this season because Martinelli's been that good. And yeah, I'm pleased with Martinelli as well because he's had a lot of injuries. But what did you make of Arsenal on Sunday?
Yeah, it's only right to start with Arsenal anyway. I mean, they're top of the league and have been for most of the season. We spoke about them. They really look like they're now turning it on, to be honest. There's a couple of big victories. They're after Fulham away, but they're banging in the goals really consistently across the board. I think it really is, I know I said it last week, but it's hard to see past Arsenal, and you've pinpointed a few other players. A lot of them are right, I mean, really banging form. When you've got Bukayo Saka playing some of his best stuff, I mean, he is a quality player. But it's not just guys like him, like Xhaka pitching in with goals. He's obviously really important. The turnaround he's had for Arsenal is unbelievable from when he was walking off, being booed, however long ago that was, ripping his shirt off, etc., to being like such a vital player. That's the thing. Obviously, without saying something obvious, if all your best players are performing, then it's going to be really hard to stop. And when you've got the quality that Arsenal do, I think we're now at the point where it's just going to take a lot to stop them. I think we're now past the point of luck and etc. They're getting some of the more important players back. Some of the players are banging form. And yeah, right now, I just don't see them being stopped.
No, I say it one week and then I watch Man City and I go, oh, I still think City have got something in, and we won't talk about them this week because they didn't play, but watching them, you know, in the Champions League, and then obviously I know they played, you know, a lower opposition at the weekend in the FA Cup, but I just think they're starting to purr, you know. And but you can't knock Arsenal. You can't knock Arsenal. They you know, just took dealt with it as they have all season, really. Just game comes, you think, right, what's going to happen here? You're going to see a different Palace as well. Jamie, what was your thoughts on the game on Sunday? And I know we've obviously touched on, you know, Palace not got a manager. It was always going to be a difficult game. I absolutely agree. I'm a bit surprised Vieira didn't stay for this one, just to sort of see this one out instead of a caretaker, you know, someone that's been in the background anyway, that's not going to have much of an impact. But, you know, Arsenal just, you know, tore them apart.
Yeah, I think, you know, like Graham said, we're expecting Arsenal now to win the games every single time. The one thing I do like about Arsenal is that every time we've given option to doubt them, they've actually proved us wrong. And what I mean is, like, you know, recently they went out to the Europa League on Thursday, and a lot of people were actually questioning whether this was going to be the start of the downfall. But they turned it on and put them one of the probably the best performances of the season. They lost Jesus at the beginning of the season. You wouldn't have guessed, you know, looking at how many goals they've scored across the team, you wouldn't have guessed that they've played so long without him. I think it's something like 16 Premier League games without him. Obviously Nketiah came in, didn't exactly tear it up, but got involved. And you know, they lost Partey for a couple of games. Jorginho pitches in with a goal and pitches it. Every time we've thought they were going to stumble, they're actually proving us wrong. And I think now the conversation's changing. It's not about can they maintain it? It's about whether or not City can catch them. Going 8 points into the international break, I think, it's a massive onus on them, and it's really good for their own morale. You're now looking at Man City's game in hand and making sure that they win that, and then they've got the game against Arsenal themselves, and everybody's just saying, well, if Man City don't win that, then where's Arsenal going to slip up? So I do think the narrative's changed now, and I think it's really good. What I do like as well is it's not just one person. You guys have obviously called out Martinelli. I think that's his 13th goal this season. Saka is probably, I think he's about 14 goals this season, but his goal involvements are probably the highest of the league. You've got Xhaka chipping in, you've got Trossard chipping in with goals. Like, it doesn't matter who's missing out the team right now. They just seem as though, as a team, they're getting it done. So, yeah, I think it's theirs to lose now. I really do. The Palace, it was always going to be a hard ask. You know, it was a gimme game to some extent. Even if they brought in a new manager, no new manager would expect to have went to Arsenal and get a point, never mind three. It was always about changing the performance. As we said, that you know they probably hadn't been out of many games. They'd lost it by one goal, maybe two at a max. But they kind of got the piss taken out of them a little bit at the weekend, in my opinion. I was very strange to see Jeffrey Schlupp play right behind the striker. Now, that's going to seem mad considering he actually got a goal, but that's not really his normal position. I don't get where that was. And they put Zaha out on the wide left, and he doesn't track back and help out. As much as Zaha's a great player, he pretty much isolated his fullbacks. So with people like Saka, who's arguably one of the best in the league at the moment, it was always one-way traffic, and it was always going to end up that way. So, yeah, there was no surprises in that game itself.
No, absolutely not. And boys, just one word answer on this one. Graham, because we're in last international break at the end of the season now. Are Arsenal going to win the league?
Yes.
Jamie?
Yes. I've changed. I was saying City for a while, but I think it's too much. Too much has happened now. City haven't closed that gap yet.
The thing is, okay, gap's eight. I know City have a game in hand, and they've only scored 13 goals in the last two games. But they can score as many as they want. But unless Arsenal slip up, what's it matter? So
yeah,
I'm still gonna say City. I'm gonna go against you boys. I'm gonna
based on what?
I just think they've got another gear. I, do you know what I was saying? I know we normally only talk sort of about Premier League, but watching Arsenal Thursday night, see when they play. Sporting are a good side, by the way. Mm-hmm. But see, when the pressure's really, really on, I'm still not sure about Arsenal. And listen, you can't knock them, but I just think.
I think there's a difference. See if they were to play Sporting every game between now and the end of the season, I could probably buy that. See when they're playing teams below them that they've been pissing over, in the build up to that. I mean, they've got Newcastle away, Liverpool away. And they've got City. They're probably the three biggest games they've got left in the calendar, I think, in a league game. So there is definitely slip-ups there. I don't see City closing that gap. That's the difference.
The thing with Arsenal going out of the Europa League, obviously they played a strong team. I just think that I'm not necessarily thinking they'll be absolutely devastated. Like I said last week about them looking to prioritise sooner rather than later if it starts kind of getting close to the end of the season, really down in the nitty-gritty. I'm not sure them going out is the worst thing. And I actually think if you're Man City chasing them, I get Man City out of the Champions League, that's one thing. But I do honestly think Pep Guardiola, he would have probably rathered Arsenal got past Sporting Lisbon. So I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. I think, you know, their full concentration's on the league, and I think they'll do it.
No, that's a really good point. As you say, going out, I think that a lot of Arsenal fans were gutted. They went out Thursday night, and I know as supporters, you never want to prioritise anything. You just want to win everything. But that could be key. But I just think Man City have been over the course here. I still can just think. I know you're saying, Jamie, with the fixtures, but I still think City are going to go on a run. I don't know. Maybe I'll be wrong. It'd be good for someone else to win it as a neutral.
I think I've been with you all season. I've been, no, City are going to kick into gear. The problem is they've had all season to kick into gear, and they've really not. And that's to say, you know, we're saying they're not kicked into a gear yet, and they've got arguably one of the best strikers that have ever hit the Premier League in one of the greatest forms that they've ever actually hit. You know, breaking numbers, and you're like, they still might actually win fuck all this season.
Right, the thing is, look, we have been saying we need Man City to go on a run, etc. They have won six games in a row in all competitions. They are five games in a row without conceding a goal. I think this is good for them. Champions League as well, obviously. I mean, scoring, winning 7-0 and 6-0. Burnley are no mugs, you know. Yeah. So, look, yeah, this is them. They're hitting at the right time, of course. I think it could be exciting, yes. But I think Arsenal might cling on. If Man City in this kind of form, if they don't win the Champions League this season, then I don't think they'll ever win it. So, they'll be going for quite a few fronts. And I think when we're talking about prioritisation, Man City and their fans and Pep will take the Champions League over the league without a doubt, whereas Arsenal, it was the league all day long. Mm-hmm. So, I think league Arsenal, for sure.
Nice, really, really good point, Dad. So I'm expecting Liverpool to beat City in the next game, and that'll be it. But that, that's
what I'll take that.
That's what it is, though. Now, in all fairness, City can't afford one more slip up before they play Arsenal. They need to keep winning, and they've not really been in that position for a while. So that'll be interesting. But it'll be one I'm looking forward to when we're next on, boys, talking about the next result. But Graham, moving it on to Friday's night's game, which was actually a really, really good game of football, to be fair. It was a little bit of a throwback the way that Forest played. And to be fair, Newcastle as well, they're both quite two physical teams. I think that's one thing that kind of Eddie Howe's teams, I think, has always gone missing. They do put it, his team does put it about. They are quite physical. And John Joe Shelby playing against his old club, he had a couple of meaty challenges in the first half. I'm not sure he was a big fan of Bruno Guimarães, by the way. I don't think he got on with him because he'd done him two or three times early doors. But the player I want to pick out of this one was Isaac. And he obviously missed a lot of the season through injury. But he was the best player on the pitch for me by head and shoulders above anyone else. He looked so sharp. And the goal he scored as well, goal of the weekend for me. And I don't know if you boys agree, but what did you make of that game on Friday night, Graham?
Yeah, enjoyed it. I think from both fronts, obviously Forest have been a poor run of form. I think Newcastle being a bit more inconsistent. Big win for them. Obviously a devastating kind of last minute penalty for Newcastle. I think a lot was made of kind of this shithousery of Trippier looking like he was going to take it and the kind of mind games and then handing off the ball to Isaac, but kind of at the last second. But that guy is class. That boy is absolutely class. I honestly think that will be... It's a shame he got injured for that length of time as well, but I think in terms of a striker in the Premier League, behind if it wasn't for Erling Holland in terms of striker this season, I think Isaac would potentially be one of the signings of the season. But not, look at you laughing. see if it wasn't for his injury, his goal contribution already for Newcastle is wild. I honestly think he would be up there as one of the signings of the season for sure. I think Newcastle will be struggling to keep hold of him long term. Kind of like Bruno Guimarães, it just depends what the money's saying and kind of how well Newcastle are doing. But I think he's an absolutely phenomenal player. And see even the ball he put in, that ball he put in the box, like he's not just a big tall, he's not a one man band, right? He's got a lot of strings to his bow. I really think he's top class. He's certainly Newcastle's best signing for years, and I include Guimarães. I think he's that good, and I really think he'll only get better.
No, I think you're right, Gary. I know he's having a little laugh there, but his injuries was a big, you know, turning point, because I think we'd be talking about one of the players. Not, we wouldn't be talking about Haaland, but we'd be talking about one of, you know, I think he'd be right up there in terms of, you know, everyone else with the goals. But yeah, that ball we put in for Anderson, the goal that was disallowed for VAR, he's just got a little bit of, he's just got quality. Jamie, I've got to ask you this one. What did you make of the Forest centre-half? Is it Nakate? The handball?
Nakate. I mean, that's just criminal, isn't it? Well, you know, jumping that high with your left arm up is, you know, it wasn't like he tried to mask it. It was like it was a full stretched arm. I kind of feel sorry for him, but at the same time, if you do that, it's only going to come out one way. He'd had a pretty decent game, to be fair. He hadn't been terrible. It was just decision making. And you can see from the slow-mo from behind the goal, before he's even dropped to the floor, he's already got his head in the hands. He knows what's happened. He knows what's going to happen. He knows he's just lost it for the team. It was criminal. And I think, you know, it wasn't the way the game was going. The game was going to potter out to a draw because obviously they were both teams attacking each other. They kind of nullified each other to some extent. But I think it was Isak's ball, wasn't it? That Isak crossed it in and then the header come back off. And as you said, the cross he put in was absolutely brilliant. So they did create it to some extent. But yeah, defending like that is a big no-go in any of the Premier League games. I love Isak's, you know, his first goal, the way he improvised his jump and kind of hung his foot back. He took it really, really well. And I think he's definitely one for the future for them.
Just having a look the stat. I know you boys love a stat. Mason usually has one up his sleeve most weeks, but there he goes. He's actually scored every 105 minutes for Newcastle this season. Only Haaland has a better record. Obviously, Erling Haaland's, I think he's got a goal every 10 seconds or something like that, works out or something this season. But look, Isak is obviously...
How many goals has he got?
Don't know how many, but it's every 105 minutes is the stat. What his actual goal tally is so far this season, I'm not sure. But he's awesome. He's a phenom, I think. Class.
He's a cracking player. I believe it or not, I watched him when he was in Dortmund before he went to Solskjaer. He was brought as a replacement for Moussa Dembele, because when Dembele, before he moved to Barcelona, was an absolute phenom over in Dortmund, and when he moved on to Barcelona, they actually spent the money on Isak and brought him from, I think it was AIK for over in Sweden. He was a young 17-year-old impressionable lad. He was playing second fiddle to people like Aubameyang, though. So he's definitely got talent. Solskjaer was a bit of a sticking point. He was riddled with injuries, but when he got game time, he got the goals. And I think he's definitely one for Newcastle to kind of focus on going forward. Doesn't come cheap. I think they paid about 60, 65 million for him. So that's probably about the right rate, you know, in terms of his age and his you know, his ceiling, if you like. I don't see him moving on. I think Newcastle's probably the right kind of club for him, you know, for them to build around. As you said, I think his debut was against Liverpool at Anfield. So I was down there for the game, and he scored in the cop end. It just doesn't come much better for his debut. So thankfully, they lost the game 2-1. But, you've seen from that first game, he actually done Trent, which, to be fair, I think a lot of people have done Trent this season. He kind of showed a bit of skill in the box. I really like him. I think, as I said, he's one for the future. I think he's about 22, 23. So he's definitely got a big prospect. It was funny you mentioned Jonjo Shelvey, because I had Shelvey to get booked in my curtain. They were offering odds of like 4-1, and he must have had about 4 terrible tackles in the first half, and not one of them got booked. He actually got booked, but nobody's seen it. He actually got booked for protesting for the penalty in the 93rd minute. So I didn't even know my bet had came in until obviously I checked it later. But yeah, Jonjo, I'll always love a bit of Jonjo. He did so well for Liverpool, but he never scores a bad goal, does he, Jonjo?
I think this is a point we should say. If you are going to bet, please bet responsibly. even if you're Mason dabbling in Man City right now, they're all up to me, so
on a run.
No, Isaac's got 10 goals in 6 goals in 10 games in the Premier League. 6 goals, 10 games. So that's decent record, isn't it? Considering the injuries.
Not when Nunes has only got 8 goals, so yeah, I know.
To be fair though, Jamie, if I'm being honest, if you're offering me one of the two, I'm taking Isaac, mate. I've got to say, I think I like Nunes though. I like Nunes. I think he's raw. I think he's got a lot to come, but I'm having a bit of Isaac. I think he looks like a top player.
Don't appease him talking about Liverpool when we're not talking about Liverpool. He's nice.
I was just laughing at Graham's.
I'm just laughing at Graham's statement.
Just a bold claim, like players of the transfer buys of the season.
I think he would look. I said, look, if Erling Haaland hadn't been bought, I think he would be one of them. And I do think I said, if he hadn't been injured, that injury in the middle of that middle part is kind of hampered him a bit. But he's class. Just you wait and see.
No, just on that boy. I said, you know, about Forest, I think they're going to get dragged into it. I think they're. By the way, the finish by Dennis, big mistake from Botman, but the finish from Dennis was top class. But they just didn't look like scoring, and obviously home form's been big for them. They had the best home form in the league before that game, but I still think just quality wise, they're going to struggle.
Their away record's really poor at the moment as well, isn't it?
Shocking. Yeah, it's shocking. Yeah. They can't buy a win away from home. I don't know if they've won away from home, to be honest. So I'll have to look at. But I'm going to throw another one at you whilst it's the international break. Who are you having for, Jamie will probably say Liverpool, but Graham, top 4 spot, Newcastle or, you know, Spurs. Do you fancy Liverpool going on a run and getting it? But if you, again, you know, bet responsibly, but who are you going in with fourth?
Liverpool. I think Liverpool pip Newcastle. I think it could actually be really tight. I think we're really lucky this season. Is a neutral looking in. You know, if like okay, I know me and Jamie are saying Arsenal win the league. I don't think either of us are suggesting that they'll just run away with it by any means. I think they'll get there in the end. Will it be exciting? Yeah, I think so, and I hope so. I think fourth could be. Like Tottenham on a bit of disarray, I'm sure we'll get on to that. I do think Liverpool get there. Then obviously we've got the relegation battle. So, yeah, it's an exciting end. Usually at this point, something happens and teams run away with it, or teams go down, or fourth is tied up. Everything's kind of to play for just now. So, yeah, Liverpool for me, I think they always just manage to do it. And I think other teams' performances just now, and I think their class will probably shine through.
Yeah, see, I keep saying Liverpool, and every time I say, oh, they'll get it easy, they go, like, they have that result against Bournemouth. Jamie, who are you going with for that fourth spot?
I definitely don't think it's Tottenham. I think, you know, they're so inconsistent. They've currently played two more games than Liverpool and Newcastle, and they're only just clinging on to it, in my opinion, with the rather than giving you a prediction, I would say the one I'm worried about is actually Brighton. Brighton are just not going away. Brighton are the same points as Liverpool at the moment, and have only played 25 games compared to Liverpool's 26. So while we're saying that Liverpool could go on a run, which they possibly can, Brighton are not going away right now. And they're kind of the one to watch. Brentford are the same, but I don't see Brentford doing it. Liverpool have got a tricky few fixtures coming up. I think I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago. We've got City, Arsenal, and Chelsea back-to-back. That's not great in any kind of form. But the reality of it is Liverpool's so inconsistent season, they'll probably fucking beat one or two of them and draw the next one. They'll come out with 6 or 7 points. I think if we get through that, I think we've run up. We finish fourth because we have the experience of that running. I think it depends on, as you said, what Newcastle and Brighton do if they continue the form, whether they get back into it.
I'll give you here's a prediction you can nail down, right? Brighton will not finish in the top four.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We'll come
strong,
on to that.
Strong point. It's just when you look at the table right now, it's hard to not factor them into any conversation, in my opinion, considering they've only no played chance. 25 games.
I know. They had a FA Cup this week, didn't they, mm-hmm. Brad? But, do you know what? It's been such a mental season. It would surprise me. Now, listen, it would be mental. It would surprise me. But their form is them and Brentford, I think, are the top.
Yeah.
And then the top since the World Cup, I think they're third and fourth behind City and Arsenal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Just the last bit on the Forest Newcastle game. You mentioned it, Graham. Trippier taking the ball. I love that. I love that.
I think that's brilliant. Somebody else did it the week before as well in a penalty. I can't remember if it was the Champions League or something. But I remember when Trippier done it, I was thinking that, you know, that must be they must be talking about these things, you know, between players about doing this now. I love it.
It was, Jamie. It was Havertz, Chelsea. Ages, didn't he? It took ages.
You'll be wishing Mo Salah had done that.
That thing's still going, fuck's sake. Fucking hell. Haunted.
Brilliant. But Graham, that leads us nicely onto Spurs. Game of the weekend. 3-3 with Southampton. 3-1 up with, what, 10, just under 10 minutes to go. And then big point for Southampton at 3-1 down. And to be fair, great spirit to go back into it. But we've got to talk about Antonio Conte's post-match interview. If that isn't the biggest sack me I want out of here, then I don't know what is.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, don't really know what to say. I don't think anyone really could argue with what he's saying, but like, certainly regardless, right? You cannot come out with some of the stuff he said at that presser. And I think if you're a Spurs fan, who a lot are probably already a bit disgruntled with him, with how they're playing, I think there's a factor of has he given up, etc. I think they will be even more raging that he's came out and said some of the stuff he has. So in terms of that, yes, is that the biggest sack me? I think so, but well, he's out of contract at the end of the season. He's gone. Obviously, he's gone. It's just a case of who taught him, like, wanting to line up. And maybe they're already looking. And listen, if whoever they're looking for and whoever they're looking at, if they do have someone and they became available, I'm sure they might just cut Conte loose immediately. I don't see that. So they'll maybe save themselves a few bucks. They're not doing anything. They're not going to achieve it in this season. So really, I don't see what they have to lose. I think more than anything, they might be able to like terminate his contract at the rate he's going for, like some sort of bringing the club into disrepute or something. So maybe they could go down that route if he continues on. But yeah, like, definitely the game of the weekend, I guess. Southampton they are bizarre just now, just really kind of up and down with the results after that midweek loss at home at Brentford. Then 3-1 down. I think that is more about Tottenham rather than Southampton. Probably harsh, but fair play. They grabbed the point for nothing. 93rd minute penalty as well. So yeah, it keeps them in it. Another point towards trying to battle relegation. Definitely needed it. See where they go for there.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it's just mad. He was even digging out, you know. The players are the biggest one, but even coming out and saying about Daniel Levy, the owner, he kept saying the owner under this club won, you know, nothing in 20 years. He's just sitting there going, bloody hell, like, it's absolute nuts. My mate was Monday morning was at Stansted Airport. Sunday went to Stansted Airport to watch the Roma Lazio game last night, and Conte was on his flight. And he said he got absolute pelters at Stansted Airport, not by Arsenal, West Ham, Chelsea fans, or by Spurs fans. So it goes to show what you, as you said, Graham, they're starting to, you know, you know what it is? It's probably a lot of supporters won't like the truth, and he just says it how it is. Do you know what I mean? Which you can't do it. You can't do it nowadays. I know we should be sort of commending Southampton and Theo Walcott, who asked, what did you say, J.R. Stortford last weekend, and he goes and gets an equaliser against, you know, obviously an Arsenal player scoring against Spurs. But we've just got to talk about, you know, Spurs. What did you make of Conte's comments and throwing away a 3-1 lead? You know, that's where they are. That was really poor.
I think the funny part of the conversation, the funny part of his statement was about 2 hours later, there was a quick edit that said, but he wasn't talking about the hierarchy at the club, just to kind of prove the fact that actually, you know, it was about the players and stuff. You just think that ship sailed a little bit there. He was obviously doing what he was doing, and he knew exactly what he was saying. I was actually more intrigued in some of the stuff he said. You know, he was calling out players, but what he did talk about, he said that whatever club he's went to, he's always improved them. But the clubs he's went to, you're talking Juventus, Inter Milan, Chelsea, you know, they have crazy kind of funds. They have that league status already. Tottenham's probably the one where they're already at their top level, in my opinion. Like, they're not going to win the league anytime soon. So for him to turn them into a league winner or something, I just don't see it happening. So I think there's that sudden realization of actually where he's at in terms of what kind of club he's at. As much as they have probably one of the best stadiums in the world, they don't actually have pots of money where they can go out and do whatever he needs to. I remember at the beginning of the season, some Tottenham fans were saying that they'd won the transfer window because of the signings that they brought in. The Kulusevskis, the Bentancurs, bringing in Richarlison. Richarlison, season's over. He went off crying after about 3 minutes doing his leg. So his season seems to be done. So even then Danjuma still doesn't get a shot on the game. Like, I don't know what some of these kind of players have to do to kind of get game time. Very impressed with Pedro Porro's goal. The absolute speed that he absolutely wellied that at. Those are the kind of goals he scored up at Sporting. So I was kind of glad to see him kind of get himself on the score sheet. I was more impressed with Southampton getting themselves back into it. But when you break it down 2 minutes before their second goal goes in, Conte makes two defensive subs. He makes two defensive subs, which turns the team into a flat back four in midfield and in defence, which then invites so much pressure on. And Southampton were just up for it. They just turned on them, and they obviously got there in the end. I'm not convinced that the penalty was a penalty. The boy saw what goes to put his foot through it. I think there is some connection, but I don't think it's enough to award a penalty. I know VAR looked at it, but VAR were to call out any, what should we say, if the refs missed something, they've allowed the ref to keep his decision. So I don't think VAR had enough to get involved in it. So they stood with the on-field decision. But if you look at that challenge, if you like, the jump, I don't think there's much connection at all. I think the ref was very quick to give the penalty. And if we're, and you know, if they win 3-2, we don't hear anything from Conte. We don't talk about how Spurs bottled it. It's fine margins we're talking about here, and this was like the 93rd minute. Some penalty as well by James Ward-Prowse absolutely rifled that into the top corner. Sorry. And there was a funny bit after the, I think it was on Match of the Day, they had Ward-Prowse actually talking about Fraser Foster's actually his neighbour, when they were both at Southampton, and the kids, him and Foster and the kids used to play together in the gardens, and they always used to take penalties against each other. Yeah, it was kind of mad to see that he kind of said, I didn't want to look at him, just so I didn't bust out laughing. I wanted to make sure I took it right. Absolutely rifled it into the top of the net, so he did well. But Conte's writing's on the wall. It's inevitable. The one they're talking about at the moment now is Thomas Tuchel. Apparently bringing Tuchel back to England. Pochettino's apparently not the flavour of the month at the moment. So Tuchel's apparently the one. I actually don't disagree with that appointment. I think Tuchel will do a good job there. But is he going to get any more out of this Tottenham team than what they probably are? I don't know. It's a tough one.
Tuchel should never got the sack from Chelsea, but that's, mm-hmm. you know, that's for another time. But yeah, just on Spurs, no side has conceded more away goals in the Premier League since the World Cup break. 14 goals. Sorry, yeah, just goes to show where they're at the minute, mm-hmm. Spurs. But moving it on, boys, Brentford 1, Leicester 1. Sorry, just before we do that, go on, Greg.
Yeah, no, I think as we are on, aye, all of us, it looks like Conte's just been sacked. Ryan Mason will be the caretaker manager until the end of the season.
They did that last time, didn't they?
Yeah, so, I mean, another good wee shot for Ryan Mason, obviously, what I just said 5 minutes ago is all the shite and yeah, I'm sure they'll hold out, you know, they'll maybe have their eye on somebody. Now that's that blown up. So, yeah, it looks like he's been sacked. I don't know if it's confirmed yet. So yeah, see how that changes our fortunes. Probably not, but maybe you never know. Could be Tuchel in the next week or so. Who knows?
How about that gallant few breaking news? Love it. Nice one, Graham. Well, yeah, that's the context of it. But boys, we'll get on to the other games and we can go over, you know, back over, I suppose, if we have time, but. As I say, Brentford won, Leicester won, was another one from the weekend, Graham. Watched the highlights back of this one yesterday, and it looked like it could have gone either way. I didn't actually realise Leicester ended a run of four consecutive defeats. So to be fair, I see Brendan Rodgers was quite happy to come out of there with a point in the end. But what did you make of this one? Is it, you know, a point, not a bad result for Brentford, to be fair, because they've been doing really well, and Leicester probably would have took a point before the game as well.
Absolutely. I mean, that was four defeats in the league, but if you include Blackburn in the FA Cup, I mean, that was just five straight defeats all in. So I guess it's the old stop the rot. I think anyone probably could have maybe guessed a draw in that game. It's two teams like those going head-to-head, I think a draw is probably the more likely result. As you say, like, Brentford have been doing well. Another really solid display against them. But I think if you are Leicester off the back of five straight defeats, you do not want to be going away to Brentford. I do think that point they'll be absolutely delighted with. I don't know, they're away to Crystal Palace next, Leicester. It's really, like we've spoken about it for a few teams and a few scenarios, it's been a strange season. I do think Leicester under Rodgers should be so, so much better. I think a few times maybe said that we expect them to turn that around, go on a bit of a run. I do still think they will not be relegated, but they're definitely in the dogfight. So points like that are certainly going to help at this moment in time.
No, absolutely. And I still think, you know, I absolutely agree. They should be doing better, Leicester under Rodgers, but I think they'll be fine. Jamie, what did you make of this one? Obviously, both sides, Brentford, as we said last week, 2-0 away at Southampton. As I said, on form from the World Cup, they'll be sitting in fourth place just behind Brighton. So they're flying, but Leicester struggling. Harvey Barnes with the equaliser as well. And it is a player that I really like, Harvey Barnes.
Yeah, I think Green called it. That was a bigger point for Leicester than it was for Brentford. You know, even though it doesn't do anything to the table, but they still need to pick up these points. I think they're in the quagmire of the relegation fate. I really do. I think Graeme showed you provided the list of the last six games for every team, and Leicester's running doesn't look pretty at all. So I think any points that they're picking up now is going to be invaluable to them. And they didn't play too bad, to be fair. They kind of needed to stop that rot. I did say last week, though, if they can keep Maddison fit, then I think they'll be fine. And Maddison was brilliant for that assist, the way he played that ball through. The relationship between him and Harvey was absolutely brilliant at the weekend. I was actually more surprised that Brentford didn't do enough to win the game, actually. Tony missed a couple of chances towards the end of the game. Leicester haven't just been losing games recently. They've been terrible. You know, they've had players sent off. They've been giving away silly goals. So they kind of needed to do something to kind of stop that rot, if you like. And I think, you know, Brentford was a good point for them. But it was definitely a bigger point for Leicester than it was for Brentford.
Absolutely. And it'll be interesting to see how both of them pick it up after the World Cup. Moving it again, Graham, I feel like every week we're just praising Villa at the minute and praising Emery. That's 26 points from 14 games for him now. You know, they've scored in every game. They absolutely, you know, blew Bournemouth away at the weekend. 3-0, it should have been more. I think that's the only criticism we can give Aston Villa this weekend. But then Bournemouth, that's now 8 defeats out of 9 in the last 9 away Premier League games. So kind of tells you how both are doing right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think... Looking at Villa, this is how they should be performing and where they should be at. I think it was, you maybe said one of the stats in terms of Brentford and Brighton being fourth or something in the form table. I'm pretty sure Villa are up there, or were one of the last times I looked, in terms of the form table since maybe Emery took charge. They were fourth or fifth in the league since Emery took charge. So obviously, look, it's promising, it's exciting. We know how good Emery is. I still think that as good as it has been and as consistent as they have been, I still think really next season they'll still be aiming to maybe get 7th or 8th, try and just push into that European spot. As we've talked about before, it's hard to kind of break into that kind that dominant space of the really big, bigger and richer clubs are occupying just now. But yeah, absolutely a good result for them, and Bournemouth are going down. I've decided that they are the first team I'm dead. Even though I think I've said maybe 4, 5, 6 teams that are going down, they are the first ones I'm definitely saying they are going down. Bournemouth are going down.
Yeah, no, I agree, they're gone. Bournemouth are gone for me. There's no saving them. And Gary O'Neill, that appointment, that I think you said it at the time, Graham, as well. Gary O'Neill, they're done. They're gone. But Jamie, just on Villa and Emery again, it's just another, you know, ticking another result and something, you know, Villa don't really do is beat teams comfortably, and Graham said it. This is what they should be doing. You know, the money they've spent, the players they've got. So I think they've got a very good manager in Emery as well.
Yeah, I think it was probably Graham that said at the very beginning as well that Emery's probably too big for Villa. He's probably one of the bigger names. You know, in Europe, it was probably a bigger coup for them to get him. Villa are currently 11th. Do we anticipate Villa to be any better than 11th? Probably not. That's probably about the level. When Emery took them over, though, they were like the second bottom, or they were bottom at the time. So, you know, when he took over, it's great the turnaround that he's done. But as you said, the inconsistency, sometimes they can win a game, lose a game, win a game, lose a game. But they're sitting probably where they normally are around about now for this time of the league, at this time of the year, in terms of results-wise. I don't think anybody realistically expected Bournemouth to go to Villa and kind of turn them over, even if they did embarrass Liverpool the week before. But I think, yeah, Bournemouth, they win one game, they lose three, don't they? That's pretty much what's going to see them go down. But yeah, I think Villa would pretty much a stick on for a home winner. Excuse me, at the weekend. What was probably surprising is that actually Watkins didn't get another goal because of the form that he's been on. I think it'll be a bigger question of whether Villa keep hold of Watkins more than will Villa do any better. I think Villa are probably punching about their normal weight of where they are at the moment. But it'd be interesting to see if anybody does test the waters with a player like Watkins.
I think Watkins is probably at his level. I don't see any of the kind of, I don't know, the quote-unquote bigger clubs going in for him. I think he's at his level with Villa. Unless somebody needed a kind of good, unless one of the bigger teams wanted a squad player or something, maybe.
I think if Kane goes in the summer, which is a very big if, I think it's going to start this merry-go-round for some teams. And I think Watkins could probably get turned up. I'm not saying he's going to go to a place like Tottenham or something, but I could see Watkins at a Newcastle alongside Isak. So, you know, that kind of level is probably what I'm talking. He's not going to go to Liverpool. He's not going to go to Man U. He's not going to go to Tottenham or anything. I think it's just more that next step up of the team punching, trying to get in.
Absolutely. Watkins, definitely agree. I think that is stamp. I don't see him. You know, you maybe see it with English players maybe getting a move they normally wouldn't because they've got to fill the quota. But I agree on that. Next one, Graham, then Chelsea 2, Everton 2. Kyle, this was a bit of a cracker Saturday night. And just when you think Chelsea have turned a corner, didn't think they were great. But it's now for Dyche again for another set piece. I think it's 4 out of Everton's 7 Premier League goals has come from set plays, which is obviously a typical Dyche. And Ellis Sims, by the way, what a goal. He walked past Koulibaly.
Absolutely bullied him, didn't he?
Yeah, shocking defending, but got to give credit to Sims because he took a lot of stick, by the way, after the performance at Anfield when he was thrown in. But he's come back and said, right, I'll show you. And he's gone and got a massive point. But for Everton, Everton are looking good now, Graham, aren't they?
They are. I think we all know that they'll get more than enough points to stay up. I think that's probably pretty clear. When you're talking about the goal set pieces, this is what a team like Everton needs. They need to capitalise on set pieces where they can. I'm glad you mentioned Ellis Sims, obviously. I haven't played up here for Hearts, spotted how good a player he was. He did well at Sunderland, and I think he's exactly what Sean Dyche wants. I want to say it was in Match of the Day, one of the guys was saying that, you know, that's Sean Dyche's type of player. I totally agree with him, to be honest. I think his first Premier League goal, and it was a belter. Yeah, it was minging defending. I think Kepa could have done a wee bit better as well. But it was a great goal, took it well, and I think it was deserved after Kai Havertz kind of doing that silly face to Jordan Pickford as well. I don't know what he's thinking doing that to make it 2-1. Maybe something you do 4 or 5-0, but so another kind of poor showing for Chelsea under Potter, but yeah, great result for Everton.
No, absolutely. And Jamie, what I know you're a big, you love a bit of Everton, don't you? But what was your thoughts?
I was absolutely fuming with Chelsea. I promise you, absolutely fuming. I was like, no Liverpool playing this weekend. That's okay. I don't mind watching Everton get stuffed by Chelsea. After the midweek game the Champions League game and the turnaround, you think, right, Chelsea going to turn it around. And they just were shit. They were just disappointing. They really were. Chelsea's best player was probably Ben Chilwell. the left wing back. Felix, he's obviously really good on the ball, but Havertz is not a foil for him. Really not. And I don't get, they're really, really struggling from a focal point, in my opinion. The fact Everton got back into it, it didn't surprise me because the way the game was, it kind of clogged up a little bit. It just kind of went into nothingness and there was spark happening. The penalty, very, very fortunate to get. But Jordan Pickford tried his bit of a shithousery with the, and Kai Havertz decided to give him some playful banter back, which didn't look the greatest. But the more the game pushed on, you could see Everton were actually getting more about them. They were kind of stringing passes together and Chelsea were just dropping that little bit deeper and hop before he starts shouting at the screen. It's Ellis Sims comes on, fresh set of legs, he's kind of fast in his own way, but he absolutely bullies Koulibaly from a defensive point of view, and Graeme is right, like Kepa actually gets a hand to that, but it's a weak hand. It kind of nudges his hand back a bit and you just think keeper shouldn't be getting done like that, in my opinion. But again, Everton pick up points, but so does everybody else around them. I've been calling it out. I don't think Everton are at this quagmire in any form or fashion. They're 3 points ahead of the very bottom team right now, but they've played two games more than everybody else. I think they're going to be massively in for it. I think the big difference will be as if Sims does get a run of games, because he's obviously a focal point for them striking. If he does well for them, then he'll get them out of it.
Absolutely. And he's a dash type of player as well, mm-hmm. isn't he, Ellis Sims? So, no, and you said it, Graham. He's someone that actually, I know we're not talking about Rangers tonight, but I wouldn't have been against us signing him in the summer. I think he'll be out of our price range now, though, because that's what a goal's at. At Stamford Bridge can do for a youngster, but be interested to see what happens with him if Dash, it goes into summer and if he uses him, obviously, for the rest of the season. But, gents, that's all the games this weekend. As I say, it wasn't a full fixture card because of the FA Cup. But to end this week, as we always do with a Premier League question. So, Graham, thanks for coming on tonight, as always. Who is your best Premier League right back of all time? I do it every week. And I always miss out a game. And I do you know what? I do it on purpose, just so used to pick up on it. You know what? I've said the game of the weekend. I've missed out another game of the weekend. It's been a long day, gents. But Graham, before we get to the best right back then, and I've spoiled that one early, Wolves 2, Leeds 4. We've all praised big Jules on this pod and praised Wolves, but that was a sore one. Getting beat, 4-2 and conceding 4 at home. That's dragged Wolves right back into it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think long term. I'm happy to say again, I don't think Lopetegui will be the long-term enemy. That has dragged them back into it. It was a surprise result. Again, I've certainly personally been pretty miffed about Javi Gracia. Big win for them. Really big win for them. Going to Wolves ain't easy just now to win 4-2. So good for Leeds. But yeah, absolutely Wolves, man. Couple of poor defeats back to back, and yeah, as you say, look like anyone down in that kind of bottom seven teams dragged into it. Yes, squeaky bum time, absolutely. Again, it just adds the excitement for me. So bring it on.
No, absolutely. And Leeds, Garcia, we said, they're going to struggle, but then they go and put four past past Wolves. So you know, that might get Leeds again. We said they'll score goals, so that might just pull Leeds away at a result like that. Jamie, what was your thoughts on this one? Because it was a, you know, a bit of a six pointer, this one down the bottom, and you know, Leeds away from home haven't been great all season, but you know, again, they've saved the, you know, a big performance when it was needed.
Yeah. Waiting for you to come to this game after your bold statement of goal of the weekend, and I'm thinking Johnny Otto, like absolute bowler of a goal. Probably had one of the best and worst games of his career, right enough. Absolutely shocking red card. Absolutely terrible, terrible tackle. And the ref gave a yellow, and obviously VAR had to get involved and kind of say, no, I think you've got this one wrong. But he scored arguably, probably, goal of the season in terms of finishes, controlled it beautifully, and there was also a contentious one. I'll get your opinions on this one. The contentious one for Leeds' fourth goal, Adama Traore stops down at the touchline, and the ref waves play on, and Leeds run up and score. For me, that's a foul every day of the week.
The ref. Okay, I only watched this game, I think, match today or whatever. The ref had an absolute shocker. Yeah. Anyway, I mean, missing that challenge on Ayling in the first instance, by the way, if Ayling's foot is grounded, yeah, his leg is fucking torn in two, man. Yeah. It was a shocker. But I do not understand why he's called to VAR and he still gives that go. I mean, there's a clear, like,
he's
a
holding
clear
him like a shot,
shot tug on Adama Traore. But the thing is, this is, I mean, it is very basic stuff. You've got to play the whistle. You're told that when you're 5 year old, man. So where it absolutely should have been disallowed, That's on Adama Traore as well, just stopping. Yeah. I mean, he stopped, so that's on him. It always reminds me, I remember Barthez back in the day just stood there with his hand up. Like, you have to play to the whistle, no matter what.
But the reason why I was asking is it's caused a bigger controversy in terms of other things that's been happening. So what I wasn't aware of is apparently four times this season, Howard Webb has had to have a meeting with Lopetegui about some of the refereeing decisions that have went against them, and it's been more of apologies to say that we should be getting it right. And you could tell by that frustration in that game, like, you know, especially that goal, the whole bench was out in the park. Lopetegui nearly got himself a red card. I think Matias Nunes got sent off, and he wasn't even on the pitch. Are Wolves hot done by? You know, have they been getting the raw end of the stick a little bit? I don't think they did enough to win the game. I think it was right for them to lose the game, but I also think Dawson was lucky to not get sent off in the first half as well. I think he had a really bad challenge that he was given a yellow for. But VAR's not been good for Wolves in the last few weeks, at least.
No, and I agree. To stop, I think when you actually watch it back, the Wolves manager's absolutely fuming with the ref, but I think he's even more frustrated with Traore as he stops. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was a strange one this weekend, because there was a few red cards, but they was all the 92nd, 93rd, 91st minute. Graham, what was your... we can't say the obvious because it was FA Cup, but obviously Mitrovic comes in, but we won't go on to that. But what was your worst sort of red card this weekend? From the ones in the Premier League,
was that one from Johnny on Ayling? That was horrific, and I cannot believe it took VAR to get that to red. I mean, it was horrible. It could have been so much worse. And Ayling's a lucky boy to still have his leg, man. It was honestly that bad from me.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with that. Jamie, would you go with that as well?
Yeah, I think the other one was the Brentford lad, wasn't it? Two stupid yellows after just coming on the pitch. That was just stupid. That was rash. He was trying to get involved in the game. But excuse me, that Johnny one was, that was potentially career-ending. Even my daughter, like, she was watching Match of the Day, even she's like, how the hell has he missed that? Like, that shouldn't take a left to give a yellow before it gets to a red. And she actually said he bottled that knowing VAR would do it in the background for him. That's not the way you ref it. You make your decision and then VAR either backs up or give it. You don't give the precautionary booking and hope VAR picks up whether or not it should have been a red. So the Johnny one was pretty pretty disgusting. But I think you have to, going back to what you said, I think you have to kind of give a mention to these red cards that happened also in the FA Cup, purely on the basis that there's a lot of chat going around now about how the Bruno Fernandes situation was handled. And I'm not saying he should or shouldn't, but that whole little nudge on the linesman going potentially unpunished, is kind of, people are saying, has now manifest itself into something more, where players are getting a bit more physical. I would say fucking Mitrovic is a loose cannon anyway and an absolute nut job for doing what he did. I fully anticipate they threw the book at him, and that'll probably cause Fulham an issue now for their league ending. I think he'll get like a 10-game ban.
I've got to say, just very quickly on that game, as a neutral watching Man U v Fulham yesterday, those 4 minutes or whatever it was from Fulham being 1-0 up, those 4 minutes from Fulham being 1-0 up to 2-1 yeah. down with 9 men were brilliant.
3-1. 3-1, wasn't it?
No, but that 4 minutes of 1-0 up to 2-1 down, suddenly 2 players down, a manager down. Amazing television. So good.
No, it was that game yesterday. We've seen, me and you, Graham, have seen Rangers have 4 minutes like that many a time, haven't we? Over the last 18 months. Absolute nuts.
It only happens at Old Trafford, I'm telling you.
Yeah, they played so well as well, Fulham. But I think, they're talking about Mitrovic, just seeing it on Sky Sports. They're maybe getting a 10-game ban.
I think they'll throw the book at him. I really do.
Yeah.
I think they missed the trick when it was the Fernandes. And I think they'll use this as the benchmark now.
Yeah, no, and so they should. It's the only sport you probably previously would have got away with it, but that
could be potentially his season over then, because they've only got 10 games left.
Yeah.
So if they do it, that's so on.
No, absolutely, mate. And just want to check before that is the last game. So let's wrap it up then boys, and let's go back to that question. So Graham, what is your best right back in the Premier League? Since you've been watching it, is there a clear choice, or was this quite a tough one?
No, there was a clear choice for me. I don't know if this is popular. I guess I'll judge by Jamie's reaction. Usually, I'm sure whatever, but. He is easily one of my, he was just always my favourite player, not for who he played for. I just always really liked him. He's notched up over 300 appearances. He's won every major honour in English football. He's won 2 Premier Leagues. Zabaleta, for me, I absolutely love Pablo Zabaleta. Always did, always really liked him. When I watched him, I thought that he was absolutely superb. As I say, I don't know if that's controversial. I don't know if it's spot on. I don't care. I really like him. And for me, he'd be my right back in every English Premier League team for, 90, 92 or whatever it is, all day long. He'd walk into it.
Zabaleta was a player. He was a player. He's not mine, but I'll give you that. It's a good, solid, good shout. Jamie, who is your best ever right back in the Premier League? Is a Liverpool, I feel a Liverpool player might be coming here.
No. We can't be calling Steve Finnan one of the greatest honourable men in football. If I'm going to be truly honest, it's between two players. One is because you've got to recognise the career, and the other one is because I actually really like the player. One, Gary Neville, not saying he was talented, but for what he did as a right-back slot in terms of, the amount of honours he won at Manchester United, it's very hard not to have somebody like him in the conversation. I don't necessarily think he was tremendously gifted, but what he did do is he brought passion, he brought fucking hatred, he galvanised that team, and he was a leader of that club for many seasons. And I always remember the pictures of him celebrating a defensive tackle in front of the cop, proper beating the chest, and then getting bounced with a fucking lighter on his head like a second later, and he was rolling about like an absolute fairy. But he was that kind of, you kind of love to hate him. To have the career that he did with Manchester United can't really go unnoticed. However, if I was to pick a favourite player, and I think I'll get you with this one, Mason, I loved Ivanovic. Branislav Ivanovic was an absolute no shit talking. He was brilliant. He was ultra physical. He ran through people. He popped up with the odd worldy goal. And he was the art of defending in terms of sprinting back. And also, he got bit by Luis Suarez. It's like fucking horrible. But he also won everything pretty much with the Chelsea as well. He won leagues. He won the Champions League. I absolutely loved Ivanovic. He was always one of the guys I chucked into my fantasy teams because he'd always get the assists on the corners. But yeah, when you talk about people that you like, I was a big fan of Ivanovic. Sure was.
Yeah, no, you've just took mine.
That's two out of two.
That's two out of two, mate. He was Ivanovic. Yeah. I think he had a spell the year. It was actually the year Chelsea lost the Champions League final against Man United. He was PFA. He got in the PFA team of the year, but he come up with some big goals. Mm-hmm. And 9 major trophies won at Chelsea when he was there. And he was the stand up for me. I think Gary Neville's one, you know, you have to mention as well. But Ivanovic he had everything. So good shout that one. But all that's left to do tonight, boys, is just Graham, thanks for coming on tonight, mate. And we'll look forward to it again after the international break.
Yep, look forward to coming back and see when this chat is. Bring on the kind of exciting end to the season for sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Jamie, thanks as well, mate, for coming on. And, Liverpool Man City is the one we'll be talking about next. So hopefully it will.
I called it last time. I said Bournemouth, bottom table, bottom of the league team, early kickoff Saturday. We're going to struggle to score. It's a 12:30 kickoff Saturday the 1st. We're away to the Etihad. I'm going to go one each. So we'll be talking about that when we come back. There's some interesting fixtures when the international season goes away. We've got a big week, a lot of double fixtures. So I think there's something like 20 fixtures in the first 4 days of it being back. We'll have definitely plenty to talk about. And hopefully we'll be saying that Liverpool are jumping to the fourth spot after controlling Man City and probably handing Arsenal the league.
You know what? Joe's got to the point now where I've actually come out and said it. Man City, I actually want them to now, Joe. Because I'm starting to sit here long enough. I don't know, but it'll be an interesting one, gents. But thanks for tonight, and again, thanks for everyone for listening. We'll be on with a Premier League show once the fixtures are played and out of the way. But as always, take care.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.